What's up, pod fans? It's Digital Digital Get Down, episode 69. So viewer discretion is advised.
Not really though, because mostly we spent the majority of our day watching movies for children.
Yep.
We saw How to Train Your Dragon 3.
Wow.
Which we are going to save. I have a lot of thoughts.
But it's not on the agenda for today.
No, so we got to save that. We came home and cleansed that movie with the
Some
Disney
classics.
Movies that were on TV.
Freeform.
My favorite, Mulan.
Yep.
My second favorite, Lion King.
Yep.
And your favorite,
Beauty and the Beast.
And then that led us. Well,
down
first
a
of all,
bit
that,
of a rabbit hole.
First of all,
what?
That led us to the revelation that you know the words to like the added on songs for the live action version.
Oh yeah, it's a good soundtrack.
Really?
I thought you were going to tease me for not knowing the right lyrics to the Lion King songs.
No, I would say most people probably don't know the right lyrics to that. I'm teasing you for knowing the song Evermore, which I couldn't, like, at gunpoint have given the title of.
And it's a good callback to our first ever podcast episode.
It's true. That was our first first movie we discussed, Beauty and the Beast.
That led me down the rabbit hole. Seeing the scene of what's the song in Lion King?
Just can't wait to be king.
I had like positive and negative flashbacks to that music because of the Sega Genesis game, which was like one of the first Genesis games that my sister and I got. And it was a fucking hard game. And watching someone play through it on YouTube confirmed that was a fucking hard game. Where you had to like ride on elephant butts and jump over giraffes and yell
at
monkeys. Oh my gosh.
Except that it was about a half an hour YouTube video and it took you
years. And then I found the Beauty and the Beast playthrough as well, which is like the same gameplay as Simba, except Belle is just this
horrible,
stilted, very slow moving,
like a wooden boy, like just like the ducking underneath birds. And
yeah,
like,
that was her biggest things, was stepping gently over rats
and
ducking and
cataloging
under birds.
Books, because that's all women are good for, apparently, is cataloging books and jumping over plates in a kitchen.
Catching flowers.
It was a very like heteronormative gender role video game.
Yeah. That was a serious hit of nostalgia after playing Witcher and Spider-Man.
Yes.
Recently, and then flipping to that. Wow.
And then I made you look up that Bugs and Taz one that I always mention.
You have such a weird video game history in your life.
They were free.
Free game for PlayStation? How?
Came with the system? It came with the system we got from my cousin.
Oh, right.
So I don't believe we picked a lot of these games. I think it was just like, here's all of my games that go with this system.
Most of the time, you would spend your time playing Roller Coaster Tycoon.
That was a computer game, honey.
What are you playing right now, babe? The game you said you were going to shut off so we could podcast?
I just wanted to check real fast and see how my plants were doing.
Is it one of those games where you have to check it all the time?
No, but if when you go in, like, you can upgrade them.
Tell the
stuff.
People, what's Heather's free game of the week?
You said we were going to do free iPhone game segments, and we haven't in a while, but this is one that I'd seen on Twitter as a good, like, relaxing game that you don't have to pay very much attention to, which are my favorite kinds of games. And this one's called Terrarium. And you just grow plants and you get to upgrade them. And when you get to higher levels, you get to buy cool new plants.
You can do it all indoors.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Without pots shattering or squirrels on your screens outside.
Well, there's some relentless optimism for you.
Plants that don't actually do anything.
Any Oscar hot takes? This is our post-Oscars episode.
Oh, I have zero feelings.
None at all.
No, I didn't.
It helps that we watch zero of it.
Yeah, I just like vaguely followed along on Twitter while I was doing work. Well, it's always Sunday nights, and Sundays are my days when I do my schoolwork to prep for the week. So it doesn't really like work for my mental health to be watching.
So what's your Green Book take then?
And
we have to preface it by saying every time we saw the trailer way back in the day, you were like, I think I'd like to see that.
Yes, because I didn't, the trailer made it seem like it was a buddy comedy fighting racism, where instead, from what I've heard, it's the black man's struggles being used for the character development of a white man. Like, the protagonist is actually Viggo Mortensen.
Correct.
And
that's
he's the one
story
that grows,
is, yeah.
And it's his journey. That's just, like, helped along by the black guy struggling.
Yeah, I
so
understand.
It's white-centric.
I understand when it's framed like that how problematic it can seem. I guess my only knee-jerk reaction to that sentiment is, like, the theme of the movie, from what I gather, is that this white dude becomes less racist and better by the end of the movie. And I'm not saying that makes it a great movie or an award-worthy movie, but that's, like, a show of growth that's better than a lot of other ways that type of movie could go, I guess.
I guess so, but I think the problem is that it gets, in some ways similar to the problem that people had with Bohemian Rhapsody as well, is that it gets kind of, all the, like, hard edges get rounded off so that it's just a very palatable movie for everybody.
And is that what Best Picture should be, though?
I don't think so. Was it the best movie made? Like, Best Picture should be, like, the best movie that was made. Not, like, the movie that you could take your most racist relatives to and they would still agree with or enjoy. Yeah. But, like, the movie that's the best movie. And it doesn't seem like it did anything new or was very innovative. Or
I think if the Academy was trying to show their wokeness, then they should have gone all in on Black Panther.
Or Black Klansman by Spike Lee, because he won the director.
Yeah, but see, I would have favored Black Panther, because I think that was the only movie I went to or saw last year where it felt like it was uniting people or doing something special in that sort of cultural context.
And everyone could enjoy it.
Correct. That's what I'm saying.
So if you're going for a movie that's enjoyable for everybody, you might as well go all the way to Black Panther. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So I don't think there's anything, like, necessarily wrong with Green Book. I think it's just people are sick of that same, like, let's make racism, like, a nice story for a white person to learn things.
And I get that that's Twitter's take. I can tell you from my office experience that middle-aged Minnesota people, Green Book is, like, on the money
and
for
like
what they
family.
Want. Did they see it?
Your mom was talking about it.
Maybe she was, yeah. Anyways, I think Moonlight has ruined the Oscars for a lot of people because they want a Moonlight every year. And you should just give the award to Moonlight every year if that's the movie that you want. But you're not going to have something that is
intersectional and
well
made and well acted and all of that.
Well represented by people. And I don't know. When it comes to Green Book, I just look at a lot of people who are in that movie and who are admitting it's problematic when it gets called out. And it's like, you were willing to go and pick up the paycheck for it. Like, clearly it wasn't problematic when you read the script the first time. You didn't talk to the musician's family until after the movie came out.
But who was problematic is the problem. Because when you look at, like, the people that accepted it on stage, it was, like, 96% white people
Correct.
That made the movie.
That's what I'm saying, is that it was a perfect Oscars pick for the Academy, because let them feel good about themselves, but still was, like, within their wheelhouse, kind of.
Yeah, like, they're
Whereas
not pushing any boundaries.
Whereas when they sort of let Moonlight win that year, they had to be, like, going for it.
Another problem that I've seen people have with it is a lot of the kind of controversies about the different the people in it and the directors and producers and stuff. There was all of these weird, like, sexual and racist, just, like, weird fucking controversies, kind of like with Bohemian Rhapsody with Bryan Singer.
There wasn't very many good picks that they could have gone
with
this year.
No, there wasn't, but once again, it's frustrating when there are these stories of sexual misconduct or what have you, and then, oh well, they still win the biggest award in movies, you know? And I think that kind of ties into one of my bad newses.
Bad news!
Is,
can I just say as good news that we made it through movie award season and, like, I've never seen Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga perform. I still know nothing about that movie. I have not heard the song.
We did it, babe. We survived. It's like Bird Box or, like, The Quiet Place.
Yeah.
Where it's like, don't let them see. Don't let them see. we made it.
Okay. What's your bad news?
Well, I have quite a few, but this is the one it reminds me of. So it just seems like when white creators get called out for problematic things, they're like, well, yeah, but we didn't mean it like that. And then, like, it just kind of gets moved on, and people, they still get awards and things. And then when a person of color gets called out for problematic takes on things, they have to, like, grovel and say, like, we're so sorry, and, like, rescind it. Like, that's happened a couple times with books.
Yeah.
And one of them is a author that I follow on Twitter that I really like, and I, like, was this close to pre-ordering his book. Mm-hmm. And he just pulled it.
Pulled
his whole book because of some of the depictions of Muslims in his book. Wow. Because the book is like a pseudo historical fantasy set in some conflict in Kosovo.
Okay.
And I think Muslims are meant to kind of be like the other side of the conflict. And there were some concerns about how he portrayed the Muslims in his book. And as a person of color himself, he was like, I want to be sensitive to other people's cultures. And I see that I didn't achieve that in my book. And I was mainly focusing on having queer characters of color. And obviously didn't focus enough.
Tough to check all the boxes.
Yeah. And I've seen the conversation going around Twitter that's very frustrating because it's like, it seems like authors of color or producers of color, creators of color, whatever, have to be perfect with everything. Like, if they have anything that they've done a little bit off, it's like, well, they failed. It's like, they should pull their book, or how dare they misrepresent someone else's culture. Whereas when you have, like, Green Book, where it's a bunch of white producers, and it's like they've maybe misrepresented or focused on the wrong things about the American civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh, well, and they still get an award. Or there's this other book that's been going around that's about a very famous historical trans person who in their will literally said, I don't want anyone to look at my body after I've died because I don't want to be misremembered.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a cis person at a major publisher writing a book about that trans person and is misgendering them the whole way through.
Hmm.
And with this whole controversy, the publisher just, stands by that author. And it's just like, well, it's going to be a fictional take. And, we can never really know the real history.
Yeah.
There's this double standard there.
I think that's what you're getting at, is the people behind the works of art.
Not the authors themselves.
And the Twitter pitchforks, they come, I think, with the same force regardless of who it is. But you're saying that you get kind of a security blanket, kind of.
Yes, I'm not saying the actual authors are choosing this representation. I'm saying, the people behind, the people that are bankrolling it, the producers mm-hmm. and the publishers and whatever. If it's, I don't know, obviously I'm not in these situations, but mm-hmm. It just seems like if it's a white person, they get the support of the publisher being like, well, that's just their version of it and they're allowed to their opinion. Whereas when it's an author of color or something, it's like, oh, well, how dare they misrepresent that culture? And like you were saying, how did it get that far in the first place? That's what a lot of people are saying about these books too. And it's like, this is the other part of the problem of having a lot of white or kind of homogenous people working in the publishing industry, is that they mm-hmm. don't catch this. If you don't have sensitivity readers from different cultures, then nobody catches it until it's too late. And then whose fault is that? Is that the author's fault or is it the publishing industry's fault?
I've been saying recently, the fault for me goes to decision makers. If you have the ability to make a decision, then it's on you if that decision is racially or sexually tinged in some way.
That's literally your job. That's why the higher ups get paid more, is because they get the blame for these things.
Yeah.
But that's not how it turns out a lot of times. It gets all the backlash gets put on the author.
Okay. Can you hit us with a quick good news just to balance things out a bit?
My good news ties into this too.
Oh boy.
So
you with threads.
My good news is the Golden Compass trailer.
Yeah.
At first I was watching it and I was like, I don't know about these, I don't know. And then as I was getting into it, I was just like, oh my God, I'm so excited.
You're on board.
Lin-Manuel Miranda looks so fucking intense and I'm here for it.
Have we heard him do his accent yet?
No, he just was making a
really Yeah, that's what face. I thought. Yeah.
It can't be worse than this Mary Poppins accent. I mean, I know that one was intentionally bad, but I think he can probably pull off a Southern accent.
Okay.
So yeah, I was into it. The tone and the colors visually. I'm not usually this person, but I actually paused it frame by frame for the end of the trailer because it was a bunch of flashes of different scenes, and
trying
I wanted
to catch
to,
some Easter eggs.
I just wanted to see the imagery of the different scenes.
Uh-huh.
So I'm really excited.
I'm here for the polar
it.
Bear. I didn't see the polar bear. So
Yorick.
Yeah.
Here's how this ties in.
Okay.
I've seen some people on my Twitter.
Lyra is supposed to be black.
No.
Oh.
I've seen some people on my Twitter timeline very excited about the movie like I am.
It's a show, right?
A show. Sorry. Miniseries. Whatever you want to call it. And supposedly they've already greenlit Sudden Life, the second one.
Okay.
Which I appreciate as like a bit of a completionist myself. It's very frustrating when like people start to make movies and stop, like make one movie of a trilogy or make like three.
Golden Compass.
Yeah. Or like with, I was thinking, the Narnia. They made like three
just
movies
that nobody up really cared while. About. Yeah.
Just gave up. Just fizzled.
There's one on a ship. If you really, really like water, if you like Outlander, you love it. You love it.
Ships everywhere. like The Horse and His Boy is a really weird C.S. Lewis story that would not maybe connect really well to the other ones. Mm-hmm. And The Silver Chair is a weird one. Anyway, so I would love for them
tie
to just
threads.
Make a proper trilogy.
Tie the threads. Yep.
So, I saw some people very excited about it.
Yep.
Including Mark. Mark of Mark Does Stuff.
Oh, sure.
Who did that series for his blog. And I saw him like fall in love with it, which was wonderful because it's one of my favorite series. Mm-hmm. We need to get back to finishing that, rereading the Amber Spyglass. But then there were a bunch of other people that were just like, nope, we can't support this. Like, I can't believe some people.
Oh, you did lecture me on this.
I can't believe some people are supporting this after that one thing Philip Pullman said. How can we support his, how can people claim that they're woke and support authors that say problematic things? And
how old is he?
He was
over
like,
70 or over 60 at least.
How old is Philip Pullman?
What does Australian series say?
Here is what I found.
72.
Yeah. If you're over 70, I'm not going to wait
it's
for you
like
to go.
It's not like a free pass, but also it's like a little bit of a grain of salt with the stuff that they put on the internet.
Yeah.
Especially
when the book was written decades ago. Like, the book stands alone. Like, move past that.
Yeah, and I'm struggling with this because I don't want to be one of those people that's like, oh, well, he was nice to me, so how can he be a bad dude? Like, that's not what I'm trying to get at here. But I do think that, okay, for context, what happened is that he made a problematic tweet about trans people.
Uh-huh.
Basically, his words were, can someone explain the trans argument to me? Or something like that. And obviously his biggest misstep was calling it an argument where it's like trans people exist. There's not a debate.
Uh-huh.
Like he didn't phrase it very well.
But he was saying, what do people argue about when it comes to trans
correct.
Rights?
Correct. So yeah. he...
From, there's only a few characters you're allowed to use.
From his perspective, he was trying to be like, can someone educate me better about trans issues? Because I'm not mm-hmm. educated about it. He didn't ask it very well. And a lot of people were like, why didn't you just Google it? Instead of
is that
like,
the end of the controversy? Is that all he said?
Kind of. He made some like there was he replied to a couple of tweets as well,
uh-huh.
Basically in ignorant ways, but not like malicious ways. And I just feel like you were saying, like the Twitter hordes or whatever.
I'm shocked.
There's
so many people are still on Twitter.
They're so quick to jump on anybody and like be like, you're canceled. And I understand when
cancel culture. I just heard about this year. I have to go on Urban Dictionary 3 times a day at least. I know what cancel culture is, and I know now that the internet has decided that cancel culture does not work, but they still kind of like doing it anyways.
Well, people just love to be like, that's it. You've said one bad thing, so I'll hate you forever. And I think in some contexts, like with the Kevin Hart thing, sure, he made a whole bunch of problematic tweets about gay people over the years, has never apologized for them, has never really backed down for them, has never shown that he's really changed his views. Sure, I'm not going to then support his movies or whatever because he has some problems with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that. And nobody's going to be perfect in every single way. But I also think that if it's like literally an elderly person who is using the internet and like was asking, maybe in an ignorant way, but was asking to try and be better educated on something, I don't think you can say that like he's canceled and you can never support any of his books or anything or movies because he made some ignorant tweets about something that he just was never educated about. Like, I think there needs to be some gradations. Is that a word?
Nope.
Gradations?
Yeah. Gradient.
There needs to be some different levels. Like, if someone makes like a derogatory comment about gay people using derogatory words.
Yeah.
Or if someone says, I don't understand this issue that I'm seeing everywhere, can somebody explain it to me? And says it in maybe not a very educated way. Those are different spectrums.
Yeah, I think that's maybe one dangerous fallout from Time's Up, as I still call it, even though Me Too stuck around better. And not saying that it was an intentional fallout, but the way it's happened is like, I mean, you have Bill Cosby, right? Like, he needs to go to jail for what he did.
Yes, like drugged women.
You have Kevin Spacey, who probably should go to jail, maybe.
Sexual predator.
But should have, his career was and should have been canceled.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that every man or woman that you find fault with has to go away.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, people should be given chances if they made, like, an honest mistake or honestly weren't educated about something and have then shown that they're sorry for it and they're trying to be better. Mm-hmm. I think that people need second chances on things. I think if they've repeatedly shown a pattern that they're not changing or they're fine with being ignorant about things and they're just like willfully going to ignore things, that's one thing. I think if someone is honestly trying to learn and just said something in not the best way, I don't think that's equivalent to someone throwing out racial or homophobic slurs.
You know what I say? Be big, not a bigot. I just coined that just now.
Okay, nice.
Thanks.
So, I don't think everyone gets a free pass on these things, and the internet is forever, and people need to learn better and be more careful with what they're putting on the internet and learn that people do read it and read into things you put on the internet. But I also don't think you can lump everybody that makes one mistake online into the same
category. There are, like, a lot of shitty, evil people on the internet who are not famous. Like, send your pitchforks to those people.
Yeah.
And, like, ignore the celebrities more than anything, I'd say.
So, I am not trying to say that if I like your book and I'm nostalgic for your book, then I'll excuse shitty behavior, but I also think that we need to be careful jumping down everybody's throats all the time. It's exhausting.
Okay.
So I'm really excited for the Golden Compass trailer.
Anything else on your list?
Well, speaking of, like, the pitchforks, did you see that? This is my bad news. Did you see that the, like, Covington High School kid is suing the Washington Post?
Saw the headline, didn't click it.
Whatever. Dude, move on that you suck. Proposed presidential committee on climate security is being led by William Happer, who has said that carbon emissions linked to climate change should be viewed as an asset rather than a pollutant. It should be a good thing that we're polluting the environment.
There's one and a half years to go, right?
The fuck.
It's going to fly by.
1.5 years to go until the Earth is destroyed and we're over the tipping point for global climate change? Yes, you're correct.
That was bad news, I'm guessing.
A bad news. Also known as teacher gag rule in South Dakota would prohibit teachers from instruction in gender dysphoria. So basically they're not allowed to talk about trans people.
This is the same state where they were not allowed to talk about politics?
That was Arizona.
Different state. Okay.
So this one in South Dakota is specifically like this like vague phrasing that they're like not allowed to talk about transgender people.
So soon teachers just won't be allowed to talk.
I guess so. But we'll still have to teach. And still get paid. Shit.
Okay.
The last one is one that's going to affect our family personally a lot.
Okay.
Old Navy and Gap have broken up.
Wow, yeah. Need a few minutes for this. Need a hot second.
Yeah.
The
Old Navy card that I was conned into not once but twice is now going to be useless. I hardly ever actually use it for Old Navy. I buy my underwear from Gap and you buy your work clothes from Banana.
When I got dressed for work.
Right. Now you've just
I usually just wear
you've
pajamas.
Just given up.
So I hated Gap growing up. Once I realized that Gap, Old Navy, and Banana Republic were one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
And really it struck me in a small town called Golden, Colorado.
Okay.
Just settle in for a quick story.
Okay.
So we get to Golden, Colorado, and I had just turned 21.
Can I ask, is this the time that I wasn't allowed on your family vacation?
That's the one.
Okay, cool.
I'm
still mad about
it. You don't seem settled in. We got to Golden, Colorado. I had just turned 21, just become a real man. So I said, I'll pretend to like beer at this point in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go see the Coors Brewing Factory, because that's what Colorado's famous for, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we get there and they show us, yep, this is where we make Coors Banquet. Here's where we make Coors Light.
Mm-hmm.
And then they bring us over to like a water tank and they're like, this is like sort of where Natty Ice drips out of.
Just the ooze that's left over.
And I was like, wait. So you have like crappy, starting with crappy beer over there. Then you have the bottom of the barrel over here. Mm-hmm. Like, why is that different? Like, you have the facility right there. Like, just mm-hmm. pump it into two separate cans. And so I distrust any corporation that either literally dilutes their product or, like Gap does, dilute it in terms of its materials and its construction.
Yeah, they just, like, get the less skilled child laborers for yeah. the Old Navy clothes.
And the interns, the, yeah.
As they get promoted.
The apprentices.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think that's it? All I have, yeah.
Okay. Should we get to our actual segment?
I haven't done anything yet.
I thought you already did yours.
No.
It's going to be a long podcast.
Real
settle
quick.
Settle in, listeners.
I finished the new Marcus Zusak book.
Yeah. He should have just stopped after Book Thief and just accepted it.
Definitely, yeah. That's a good takeaway. This book was called Bridge of Clay. It was an epic in the sense that it was 500 some odd pages.
In that it was too long.
Yeah, instantly too long. It was written in a kind of illegible form, almost. Like, you could not understand what was happening for the first 100 pages.
Okay.
And every review that I've read has said the same thing. You have five brothers who are living together without parents. Apparently, it takes place in Australia. One of Zusak's kind of goals for the book was to have it take place in Australia, but never use the word Australia in the entire book.
Like Orphan Black, how it was just like vaguely Canadian, but you know.
That was because they didn't want to like get forced into that, I think. Here, he was just trying to describe Australia without coming out and being like, this is outside Sydney. It was supposed to be a modern tale of five kids in middle school and high school. Not one mention of the internet or a cell phone.
Is he from Australia?
Yes, he lives outside Sydney.
Okay.
So I think that's why he didn't want to be like very obvious about it, because it was like,
this is where I live. Isn't
yeah,
that crazy?
I guess. It was by far one of the strangest books I've read. I think I gave it a D something on BookDigit, so you can read my review.
Book digits, BookDigits.com.
But it was just not worth the time of day. What else? Let's see. I had a couple of quick tech things.
Okay, hit me.
Somewhat good news. A couple of brands are coming out with the first foldable smartphones.
So we're back to flip phones.
Yeah, when you think of it like that, it's pretty funny. It's basically like this width, and then it has a screen on the outside, and then you can flip it for like a double screen tablet, sort of.
We're back to flip phones.
It's weird,
but...
Is it
more like the keyboard ones? The slide-out keyboard ones?
Yeah, it's like that thickness. It's super, super thick. So Samsung has ones.
But why?
Huawei has one. I don't really care. I'm just glad that someone's doing something different.
But why?
Because I'm so sick of this phone that I'm holding in my hand.
You've had that phone for half as long as I've had my phone.
True. Nike has self-tying shoes. But they had a bug in their app, because you need a smartphone app to use their...
To tie your shoes? Get the fuck out,
And they
Nike.
Had a bug, so it wasn't working. Unrelated to that, Nike had the Duke basketball
Duke
player,
Silver.
Who's going to be the number one pick, Zion Williamson. He wears Nike shoes, and he was wearing a brand new Nike shoe that exploded on court and ruined his ankle. And he
what?
Might be out for the rest of the season. And may have jeopardized his NBA career.
Nike, he must be suing the shit out of Nike.
We'll link to the video, but the shoe explodes as he tries to turn a quick corner.
What is this, genius?
On the floor. And they have to, like, blow the whistle, because it's, yeah.
That was a joke.
Gotcha.
My favorite Disney original movie, because he blows, the ice rink blows up.
Yeah.
And then he puts the things on the skates.
And real quick, we already sort of did our commercial for Book Digits. But
you mean
on that note,
in the background while you were talking?
Yeah, on that note, Amazon, who we used to use their API.
Sure.
Which is an application programming interface. To run Book Digits. Now, I moved off of Amazon a few years ago because they would do what's called throttling so that someone could only look up a book once every second across the world. Only one person could look at a book. And so I switched to iBooks and an internal search engine and a bunch of different stuff. They have now shut down the free API unless you convince people to buy products based on the website or app you build with it. You can no longer use it to search for books or look up book
information. So unless you're advertising to click on their links?
Yes, and you cannot get approved for an account unless you have a history of getting product sales. So how can you start a new project if you don't have sales?
I don't know.
So they are trying to block all indie developers out, and it's super annoying. So I've completely cut off from them. All
right.
I'm just reading over my Zusak review. Oh, the worst thing about the book. I knew there was one other thing I wanted to mention.
Okay.
My least favorite thing is a first-person narrator mm-hmm. on the outskirts of a story. In this case, it's the fifth least most important brother. No, sorry, the fifth most important brother. Yes. Go ahead.
What's your favorite book of all time again?
Great Gatsby.
What's the narrator situation?
No, this is different. Actually, it's sort of similar. Because in this book, the brother knows all the history of the parents, present, future, and modern day. It's just terrible.
So it's Nick Carraway.
Anyways, let's get into our main topics. Okay. Do you remember what we're talking about? I think we got to lead off with TV because...
I don't remember the book. I don't remember the TV.
No, we've been building up TV.
I don't remember the TV.
Well, we were talking about how we were going to watch this show forever.
Okay.
What was our little jingle for our TV show?
Always forget. Mary.
No, that's TV. That's movie.
All right. We're talking about
Killing Eve. It got us out of our TV rut. It got me out of a rut for like 3 episodes, and I was like, TV sucks.
Aren't we back in our rut?
Pretty much, yeah.
We didn't tell the people what we started watching.
You tell them.
We started watching Scam.
Yeah.
S-K-A-M, my favorite weird Norwegian teen drama. We're about halfway through the first season.
Yeah.
And you only like it for one character.
Chris is the mom.
Chris.
We'll get to that another week. So what do we need to tell the people? What?
We should do that with How to Train Your Dragon because it's both Norway.
That's true.
Right? Isn't How to Train Your Dragon Norwegian? Kind of?
Like that's where, no, like, I think you're thinking of Frozen. Is. The Vikings came from Scandinavia. Yeah, I guess so. Okay, we'll think about it.
Okay.
How much intro do we have to do about Killing Eve? What's it about? All right. Who's in
Killing
it?
Killing Eve is a British show.
Correct. British. BBC.
With Sandra Oh as the main character. She's like a female, not even really a detective. She's like in the intelligence agency, but she doesn't really do shit. She's like a lower level, like admin kind of person.
Not admin, but yeah.
She's an office jockey. She's not James Bond. Not Jane Bond.
Right. He's MI6. She's MI5. She's an office jockey.
No idea what that means. Yeah. So she works like in the offices at the British intelligence agency.
Yeah.
She becomes obsessed with this serial killer. Well, she's always been obsessed with female serial killers. But there's a specific one who goes by Villanelle. Who is... The actress is one of the side characters from My Mad Fat Diary.
Jodie Comer.
Which we really should get back to. Jodie Comer. And she is this... Is it sociopath or psychopath? I look it up every time and I don't forget.
She's a psychopath. Yeah.
So she's a psychopath. And she... You have the idea that she's kind of a trained assassin.
Contract for hire,
assassin from some sort of agency that's very vague. She has like a handler who's this like big Russian dude.
He's the best, yeah. Constantine.
So you kind of flip back and forth between her doing these killings and Sandra Oh and like her friends at this office who are... trying to figure out who murdered someone.
Yeah.
They don't really think there's any connection. She ends up getting fired and then gets hired by Fiona Shaw. Fiona Shaw's character, who is kind of a private investigator and general badass, but something sketchy about her. And they're trying to track down and kind of make a pattern, make connections of what's happening with this Villanelle and trying to connect all the kills that she's made.
Yeah.
And then later on, it kind of expands into a little bit of a bigger mystery of not just who is Villanelle and why is she killing everybody, but like the motive behind it, like who is paying her to do these kills. Like she's not picking these people that she's killing. Like,
correct. She gets a postcard and it tells her where to go and who to off.
Yeah. So the detectives have kind of sorted out, well, she's not necessarily doing this on her own. Like who is directing her to kill these people and why? Like what's the bigger picture? What's their overall motive?
Yeah.
It starts off pretty interesting.
The first hour was I loved. Excellent. Really drew me in. And the humor I was not expecting.
Yes, it was very just the tone of the humor didn't really match with the plot of the show in a really fun, interesting way.
Because the first episode starts and they're most of the gang is hungover from a karaoke night for Bill, who is Sandra Oh's like direct boss at the agency. No. Everyone likes Bill. No one likes Frank.
No one likes Frank.
It was Bill's birthday. They had gone out. They hadn't invited Frank.
Right.
And so they were all hungover and like talking about that while also sort of debating this loose serial killer.
And it's like this important meeting scene, but they're just like debating about like croissants and like crunching paper, and then boss person's getting mad, and it's very realistic. You're like, yes, that is what it really is like. Like if you work in an office, like even the biggest drama, if it's every day to you, you're just like, but I'm hungry.
Yeah.
Like, so they did a really good job the first couple episodes kind of balancing that certain type of like wry humor with this more intense serial killer plot. And then it was like not as intense of a show to watch because it wasn't just like
introduced to Vianel, she is like terrifying, but she is adorable, especially with the handler when she's like goofing around with him and like, are you angry?
Yeah. Are you
making voices? Yeah. And faces.
And she is an excellent actress. Damn, she was wasted on my Fat Diary.
How did Sandra Oh get nominated and not her?
No offense
to Sandra Oh.
Sandra Oh was great, but she has to kind of, she's like the straight character. She plays it straight. She's not really straight later on, but she plays it straight. Like she's like the straight man character in terms of she's the one who's just like, I just want to catch her. I want justice. And then Vianel's like the kind of off her rocker person who just does these weird things and is really interesting and fun to watch because like she's completely unpredictable of what she's going to do and how she's going to react to things.
Yeah.
So it starts off really good. I'm not a big like true crime serial killer person. I've never listened to Serial and I don't give a shit about it. I'm not a true crime kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
But because the acting was good and the actresses were good, I mean, I was a Grey's Anatomy super fan for a while. So I'm definitely a big fan of Sandra Oh, and I know that she's very talented.
Yeah.
But yes, Jodie Comer, that really stuck out to me. And I wanted to watch the show just because I was like, oh my God, is that girl from My Mad Fat Diary? Like, that's all I knew her from. And I would say most people probably didn't know her from anything. And I felt kind of cool. I was like, ooh, I knew her from that little British, like, indie show.
So there's only 8 episodes, so it's definitely, like, worth a watch, even if you don't think you're going to love it. Like, it's not a very big commitment.
Yeah.
I was totally on board, I think, for the first 3 episodes. Mm-hmm. And then I think episode 4 is
a weird turn.
Yeah, that's really jumped the shark. It's just, like, I'm not really following the logic here.
The characters' motives get a little bit fuzzy, and, like, there's a kind of a tonal shift. Like, it starts off as...
Jodie Comer is younger than me?
Yeah.
She is only 26?
Yes.
Good Lord.
She was like 16 in My Mad Fat Diary. She was like actually a teenager.
But I thought she was in her 30s.
No.
Wow.
She definitely should have gotten awards. See? What year was that?
2013 was 13. The first season. Yeah.
So she would have been like 20, 21 when she was supposed to be in high school.
Anyway, sorry. You were saying motives.
My notes was that like the show was realistic yet absurd.
Yeah.
At the same time. And I think the first couple episodes balanced that really well. And then the later episodes shifted too far to the, or slid too far to the absurd side of things where you're just kind of
I'm not.
That motive doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, it makes for like a funny or intense scene, but it doesn't really fit with the character motives. Like,
I'm not going to give away spoilers, but I'll just say there's a scene where one person has a gun. One person is part of a team trying to escape, and this other person gets out of the escape car and confronts the person without any weapon. I will just say, Sandra Oh, for someone in law enforcement or intelligence, has no weapon at any point in the show.
And never seems to want a weapon.
No interest in it. Doesn't seem skilled for that, which is okay. But then they throw her in these situations where it's idiotic that she has no gun.
Yes.
So that scene in particular where it's like risking your life just because you have a feeling that you won't get shot. And the other central thread to me that rings inconsistent throughout is that there is a major death within the first 3 episodes.
My favorite character, too.
And certain other people's favorite people on the show. And if that when that happens, that's like a deal breaker for me in terms of how relationships can form all the rest of it. If one person is responsible for killing someone that you hold dear, sorry, I don't care how much time elapses in the next six episodes, you're not going to be lying in bed next to that person at the end of it. Nope.
Yeah, there's no coming back from killing your best friend.
Yep.
And, like, threatening your husband's and...
Nico, the most, most underserviced member of this cast and show. My God.
Episode 69. So, it did remind me of Orphan
Black. Nico!
It did remind me of Orphan Black at some points. Definitely. Like, that scene in the field.
Yep.
Reminded me of Orphan Black quite a lot. Mm-hmm. So it had that kind of vibe, which I appreciated. That was like a crime thriller kind of show, but a little bit on the indie side.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that it was unpredictable. I appreciate some of the side characters.
I just want to say one other thing about predictability.
Okay.
This show, I feel like, suffered from what I call Departed syndrome.
Okay.
Which is when you get to the last 45 minutes of the movie The Departed, and every single twist is just... He was actually working for the good guys the whole time. Mm-hmm. He was actually working for the bad guys. But he is actually on the good guys. And it's like, that starts to lose its luster after a while. And this show has a little bit of that where it's like, what?
Yeah.
You have a connection over there?
I guess I meant less unpredictable in terms of like, it was a good plot. And more of like, I didn't necessarily know what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that more and more in shows these days where so much of like network TV that we watch, I'm just like, this is what's going to happen.
Well, I love the ending and start of season two that you came up with.
Which was better.
I would have watched season two if that. Yeah. I'm not going to watch season two now.
I'm going to give some spoilers because I want to like pat myself on the back here. So spoilers, if you're planning to watch this or even considering watching it, don't listen to this because my ending's better than the real ending. So spoiler starting now. So Fiona Shaw's character, she's kind of meant to be this weird, like fairy godmother, fairy godmother detective freelancer.
Yeah.
Who just like thinks it's fun to track different serial killers.
While also banging Russian intelligence people.
Yeah, so...
All the Russian intelligence people.
So, obviously there's more to her than's being let on, and in the last couple episodes...
Kenny!
My babe. The last couple episodes, it's like... Hinted at is not even a strong enough word. It's like pretty blatant that there's a lot more to her than's going on. She has a lot of connections to the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
She ends up doing some sketchy things that you're just like... Why is she doing that? And if she was, why wouldn't she tell anyone that she was doing that?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's weird stuff that starts to happen with Sandra Oh and Villanelle.
Yeah.
Which I won't entirely get into. But I was like, oh, yes, here's what's going to happen. Like, they're going to figure out that Catherine?
Yeah.
Catherine is actually, like, has some sketchy shit going on. And Sandra Oh and Villanelle are going to team up to figure out what's going on and to take down this agency that's controlling Villanelle.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that would be amazing if, like, there was kind of this truce switch-siding thing where Sandra and Villanelle, who were, like, against each other, trying to find each other, hurt each other, mm-hmm. actually teamed up to hurt the people who hurt them.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm into this. Some sort of, like, weird buddy cop kind of thing.
Yeah.
No. That is not what happens.
Mm-mm.
It gets weird. Someone gets stabbed in a bed. There's a knife where there wasn't a knife. You never really find out anything about Fiona Shaw, even though she's sketchy as fuck.
Yep.
Like, you don't get enough of the cool best friend from London.
No.
The last couple episodes just, I think they tried too hard to be like, twist, unpredictable, you don't know what's happening.
I was going to say, also, like, in addition to the Departed syndrome, there's also... I always forget the name of the video game. What was the Prison Break video game?
Prison Break.
A Way Out.
A Way Out.
Where it's like, this is the only way this plan would have worked. We have to sneak her into the jail, convince her she's gonna break out, get her to see
the
doctor.
Other person.
It's like, no, if you've convinced her to get into jail herself, you can just leave her locked in there or kill her there. You don't have to do anything else.
Yeah. So I would say, did you have any other comments on it?
That's it.
I would say overall it's worth a watch just for some of the stellar acting in it. Like, Jodie Comer's acting is just a fun to watch. She's funny in a really unhinged way, and she's just an excellent actress in this show. So I would recommend watching it just for Jodie Comer's character and the way she acts her out. And for some of Sandra Oh's stuff, and some of the side characters are really good. But I wouldn't pin all of your hopes and dreams on this being, like, the most tightly plotted thriller of all time.
Yeah.
It's definitely got an interesting feel. It's definitely got a lot more women characters than probably your average detective cop show.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're like, I want something homoerotic, but with two women.
Yeah, it's not like a procedural for sure.
No. So I think if you want kind of an interesting, different crime type show with some really good acting and some funny parts, I'd recommend the show for sure, especially because it's so short.
Yeah.
But yeah, just take it with a grain of salt that it's not necessarily going to be all you want it to be with the plot.
Prestige TV.
Yeah.
Okay. So we also have a book to talk about.
We do. This was a book that you read that I had never even heard of.
So I added it to my to-read list pretty much on a whim. I don't normally put a ton of stock in, like, these are going to be the best books of 2019 list.
Or you don't put any books on your to-read list. That's what I thought you were
going to do. True. I've got a very slim list still. But
is that just to balance me out?
You've guilted me about the lack of diversity on my shelves.
I hope to guilt everyone about that.
So I saw an opportunity here. The book is called Washington Black.
Mm-hmm.
I'll probably mispronounce the author's name. Do you want to do it for me?
I don't have it. Oh, S.E.
Aduwon?
Aduwon?
Sure. You want me to give a little bit of a summary? You talked about Killing Eve a lot.
Sure, go for it, babe.
We didn't know what Killing Eve actually meant. Was she killing some...
I still think, so it's a weird is it title. Killing Eve, like, as a descriptor for Eve? Is it Killing Eve, like, an action, like, Eve is going to get killed? I still think my favorite is my interpretation, which is, like, Christmas Eve, like, Killing Eve, the eve of killing someone, the night before you kill someone. Because she gets the postcard and then goes to kill people.
Correct. I think it's, this is all Killing Eve in her head.
Okay.
Hmm. Washington Black is a novel. Set in the 1800s, I believe.
I just have to say to start off, mm-hmm. not a fan of the cover.
Wasted cover, yeah.
Wasted cover.
Yep.
There have been a lot of books that I have, in the past year at least, like in 2018, that I loved the cover and hated the actual book. And I'm happy to say this one was the opposite. But I just had to get that out there. Could have been a better cover.
So it takes place in, the 19th century during the slave era. Although it starts not in, like, the American South proper. It takes place in Barbados, I believe.
The UK cover is a little bit better.
Yeah, that's better. So anyways, the primary character is the first person narrator, whose name is George Washington Black.
Oh, this one's the best one.
Yeah, that's good. They call him Wash most of the time. So mm-hmm. Wash is a slave on this plantation, on this Caribbean island.
And he's like a child.
Child slave, yep. This story basically tracks from his, more or less his birth on the island, and then everything that happens moving forward, next decades, really. And so the first kind of, maybe fifth of the book is like, sort of what you'd expect from a slave narrative. Like
plantation life.
Interactions with the plantation owner, the masters.
Lots of horrible, horrific deaths and rapes. And
yeah.
Not explicit rapes, but implied rape.
Yep.
Of children.
And like some interactions with the other slaves and talking about their experiences and what they think their lives are going to be. And
the homeland for them versus how complicated that is for the ones who are born as slaves. Like what is their homeland?
Sure. But then there's a new arrival within the plantation house, which is the owner's brother.
Well, the original owner dies.
Correct.
Excuse me. And then the family members come
to sort of
take it over because it's been inherited. And then that person's, the new owner's brother arrives.
Correct. And his nickname is Titch.
Terrible.
And so when does the other guy arrive? Philip.
A little bit later on.
Okay. Right. So anyway, so Titch arrives, and he is more or less, I guess to put it plainly, the white savior in some ways. He is the nice...
In some ways. He thinks he's the white savior.
Yeah.
He sees himself as this, like, more...
He's an abolitionist.
Evolved. Yeah, he's an abolitionist. He sees himself as, like, a more evolved white person who understands that we can't just, like, kill black people.
Right. But he doesn't come to the plantation to, like, set all of his brother's slaves free. He actually comes primarily to work on his engineering and science experiments, for which he enlists Wash to help him.
Mainly because, as he puts it, he is the correct weight for an experiment that he's doing.
But Wash also turns out to be a very good artist, and yes, that comes into play in terms of documenting diagrams and other sorts of things. So anyways, the two of them kind of team up, and Wash is, like, logically skeptical, but slowly becomes trusting of Titch.
More trusting.
Yeah. But at the same time, another family member, Philip, comes.
Cousin.
Cousin, right, to them. And he is, like, pure shit, pretty much.
He's just very used to a certain lifestyle and has no interest in reframing his worldview of anything or questioning any beliefs. He just wants to, like, eat nice food and be in nice places and not worry about anything.
Right. And so the big project that Titch and Wash are working on is a hot air balloon, which in that point in time is pretty new technology.
It's kind of meant to be a mix of, like, a hot air balloon and a Zeppelin.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a hot air balloon with wings.
Yeah. So there's an incident near the hot air balloon. Philip's sort of involved. Wash gets... Wash gets burns and scars all over his face.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of tension back at the plantation home. And
there's a lot of, like, brotherly, like, Wash kind of gets caught in the middle of Titch and his brother's, like, years-long feud.
Yep.
Which is a problem.
So we won't go through the entire plot, but there is a death on the plantation, which Wash is sort of set up for.
Yes.
To be implicated in, although he's not responsible.
And part of the problem there is that there's kind of a division between the different roles of the various slaves, whether it's a house slave or
a field
slave. And Titch gets disliked by a lot of them because they think that he thinks he's special because he's, like, special assistant to the
Wash
owners. Wash has a lot of resentment from them for getting the special position where he just has to hang out with the owner's brother. And so he gets put in this awkward position where he's obviously not accepted by the white owner group, but he's also no longer really accepted with the slaves, even with Big Kit, who is kind of his maternal figure. So,
or even more potentially.
Yeah. I didn't care for that revelation. So
but
he's
that's,
kind of,
yeah,
nobody's really on his side. He's very alone.
That kind of sets up his worldview logically for the rest of his life, really.
Because
everywhere
really,
he goes.
Yeah. He never really had a family, never really fit in anywhere because when he got accepted as Tish's assistant, which, not that he had a choice, but when he got conscripted to be Tish's assistant, he lost his ties with the field slaves because he no longer had that camaraderie with them, forced camaraderie, I should say. But he's never really going to be accepted into the white people's world of that time.
So, the death and the balloon sets Wash and Titch off on basically an adventure that lasts the rest of the book, jumps around from city to city, continent to continent.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to just highlight maybe what were your favorite parts or which parts stood out?
I was going to say this when we were talking about Green Book, and I saved it, but I think this is the opposite of Green Book, in that the black character's struggles and journey are very much made front and center, and it highlights the fact that the white character, even when they think they're doing their best, there's still problems with the way that they treat the black characters. Like, the fact that Titch kind of saw himself as a white savior was a problem. He never saw himself as equal to Titch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's
Wash.
Wash and Titch, they're very similar. Wash is the former slave.
Yeah.
Titch is the white scientist engineer. Titch, even though he, like, likes to think that he's this more evolved, nuanced white person that sees the world as it should be or whatever, he still doesn't view Wash as equal to him.
No.
Like, he's sympathetic to Wash and doesn't believe he should be harmed, but he still sees him...
He's a charity case for him.
Yeah, he's a charity case. He doesn't see him as property, but he certainly does not see him as someone who is equal and has equal
potential.
And
at one of their first stops, he tries to ditch him.
Yeah. And he pretends that he's doing it for Wash's sake, and maybe he is to some extent, but I think he also... I don't know, he doesn't really know what to do with Wash, and he is kind of his property with the way that the laws were. And it almost protected Wash to some extent to be his property.
Correct.
At some points of the book. So there's this very awkward tension between the two of them where Tish is the closest that Wash has to some sort of family link at this point. But at the same time, there's always going to be an awkward dynamic between the two of them because Tish did save him to some extent. And it's, I just thought that dynamic was well done and well explained without over explaining it.
Definitely.
Like there was a lot of well done nuance there of showing that, like, yes, Tish is a better white person than most of the white people of that era, but that does not mean that he was like a perfect human being or that he saw them as equal either.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I thought that was really well done. And I thought that it was a book about Wash and about Wash's journey. Whereas Green Book this story would have been about Tish.
Sure.
Instead of being about Wash.
Yeah.
So I was thinking that when we were talking about Green Book earlier and like whose perspective should be front and center, whose struggle should be the one that's focused on. Like, this book could have easily been written by a white dude and it would have been Tish's struggle and this, like, the slave that he tried to save would have been just a portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it was so much more interesting and real and genuine to have it from Wash's point of view as he tries to grow with all this trauma that he's been through in his life.
It's well said.
And I love the science aspect of it. Like, I knew you would. I was not expecting that.
Still a little marine biology thrown in for you.
Yeah, like, Wash turns out to be really interested in science, and how much of that is, like, nature versus nurture is unknown. But he's really interested in science. He's really good at drawing. I connected it a little bit to Golden Compass, and that, like, drawing came really easily to him when he was little, but there was, like, no pressure. And then mm-hmm. when he was older, he kind of had to relearn how to do it intentionally.
Yeah.
So there's some cool science stuff with Wash and him trying to pursue a career that wasn't really an option for him and his race at that time period.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked the science-y parts of it. I just recently read like a romance novel where the protagonist was like a black girl scientist. And it was like too many science jokes for me.
Mm.
Like there was a lot of like metaphors that were science based that you would think I would like because I understand them. And I was just kind of like, that's a little bit much for me. Whereas I thought this book did a good job of having him be very science minded due to his training and be interested in science. But it wasn't like every metaphor he used was talking about cells or something.
And it was like, it's historical science. So it's like them figuring out a lot of stuff that's very common in everyday modern life. Like they try to work out how to do an indoor aquarium for a sea creature.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, now I just assume people put a tank together and that's it.
Yeah. And I also read a different book, that the Octavian Nothing book. Gosh, I really didn't like that book.
Mm.
And that was trying to be like a boy who was half black and was interested in science and whatever. And I really did not like this book. So that book. And I really liked this book. This mm-hmm. was my highest rated book this year so far. We both gave it
A-.
We never give the same grades.
I really enjoyed how quick moving it was in terms mm-hmm. of plot and setting. I admit when I picked it up and started it, I was like, all right, I will settle in for a slave narrative. Like, mm-hmm. I know what I signed up for.
And like, it's going to be a long book and it might not be fun painful, to read some of it. And
like, even, you know, the first section was very interesting and very, quick to read, but then once they get off the island, it's just like boom, 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 boom. Everything's like a true lost happening. Fan. And I was just engaged pretty much from beginning to end.
I was a little hesitant to pick it up because my to-read list is out of control. And even my to-read pile of like books that we own that I need to read is out of control.
But I forced it on you.
But you forced it on me. And the way that you said it was that it wasn't very literary. Like it looks like it's going to be literary. And even the description sounds like it's going to be more literary, but it's written more like YA and not in a negative way, but just that it's very fast moving narrative and it's very character focused. Like it's not so much like sweeping plot and descriptions and all that. Like it's well written and there's really good imagery and everything.
Every chapter like was describing a sequence of events.
Yeah.
And there were good asides and good kind of thoughts relative to those events, but it was always moving forward.
Yeah. And my part of my book to jits review was that it did a really good job of balancing like history and fiction.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like
I don't know if I've ever read proper historical fiction.
Yeah.
If this is what it's like, sign me up, but I don't think this is what it's like.
I feel like a lot of historical fiction either focuses too much on the facts of it
mm-hmm.
and it just like reads like a nonfiction like textbook, or focuses so much on the plot and the characters that you're just like, is there anything factual in this? I don't know.
My review had 2 votes and yours had 0. I just threw you one.
You know I'm in a race to recover my top spot.
Ask the potters.
If anyone
has
a Book Digits account, go and upvote my recent reviews. I'm Remus Lupin on all one word on Book Digits because I'm racing to get my top spot back from someone who usurped me. Anyway, so my review was that part of my review was that I thought there was a really good balance where I felt like I like learned like an authentic perspective of a slave on one of these plantations. Like the author did not shy away from a lot of the harsh realities of slave life and mm-hmm. the suicides and the different ways that they were punished and like the pregnancies and the
just their overall existence.
How the families were split up and their living. Yeah. Like it was very, I haven't done the research myself, so I don't know how accurate it was, but I felt like I got a very accurate picture of what the life was like on a plantation in mm-hmm. the Caribbean islands. But at the same time, I never felt like I was getting a history lesson. Like it was all really well interwoven with Wash's narrative so that I really wanted to keep reading to find out what happened to Wash, but I had a really good imagery of like the life that he led. And like, I could even like picture now like what the plantation lands looked like. Like I have a really good image in my head of like how the lands were set up and everything.
Yeah.
So I thought it did a really good job of balancing those two things.
Mm-hmm.
My only critique I would say is that I wasn't a huge fan of the ending.
Love the ending. It was like bordering on B plus territory for me, and the ending gave it A minus.
I was the opposite. It was bordering on an A for me, and then like the ending, not just like the actual ending, which was kind of abrupt, but the pacing of like the last couple
All of the stops. London stuff you're saying, or
London to Amsterdam
yeah.
to Morocco
yeah.
was all like 100 pages.
You're saying that's too quick or too slow?
It was
slow?
Too quick.
I'm okay with that. I was okay with that.
I'm okay with the overall pacing. Like, it makes more sense to kind of build his life as it was and how that changes.
Mm-hmm.
But the last couple chapters, I felt like I got a little bit of whiplash of to London, back to Amsterdam, back to
yeah.
London, back to the person's house, back to London again, and all of a sudden they're in Morocco, and then it ends.
Yeah.
For me, I get very invested in stories and characters, and I didn't feel like I was that satisfied with the ending. I wanted, like, a little bit more from the ending.
Okay.
And I don't know, obviously you disagree with me, so I don't know what it is about the ending specifically that bothered me, but
I wasn't sure in terms of the plot what there was left for Wash to do. He had gotten his freedom. He had
gotten some closure, kind of.
Gotten some closure and sort of gotten revenge against the people who were coming after him. He had fallen in love. We matched Tenna, or
maybe that's part of it. Is I didn't really care about their relationship.
I didn't at first, and then she won me over after a while. She was pretty quirky and kind of funny.
I thought that relationship development was a little rushed with both her dad and with her.
A little bit, yeah. So yeah, leading into the last kind of section, I wasn't sure what there was left to do, but you know, kind of spoiler alerts. A lot of the second half of the book is Wash trying to figure out what happened to Titch and. Mm-hmm. If he should be worried about him, if he should be looking for him, if Titch is looking for him, what he ever meant to
him.
Yeah.
Like,
just needs some serious closure in that regard. And so they do come together. I'll spoil that. And the ending is, it's very kind of eye-opening.
I liked that aspect of the ending,
yeah.
of like that Wash spends a lot of his journey in the second half of the book trying to find some closure and feels like if he just can find Titch and talk to him, then he'll understand and he'll be able to ask him these questions that have been plaguing him. And that's not how it works in real life. Like, you don't get clean-cut endings. And
your life doesn't get wrapped up thanks to somebody else.
Right, and your plot, the plot, quote-unquote, of your life doesn't just get wrapped up in a nice, even 300 pages, whatever.
Yeah.
So I appreciated that aspect of it, like their dynamic,
mm-hmm.
because it felt really real. It felt like that is how it would really happen in real life. You have it built up in your head for however many years, and you go there, and it's a disappointment. Like, it doesn't – you're not going to get all these questions magically answered, and you're not going to feel self-fulfilled in an instant just because of one conversation that you got to have.
Mm-hmm.
But your head kind of builds it up like that maybe that will be like that. So I thought that dynamic was really well done. But yeah, just the part with Tana and her dad and the aquarium and traveling all over Europe and Northern Africa. And
yeah, it loses its kind of urgency a little bit.
Yeah, so I just thought it lost a little bit of its magic in the last couple sections for me. But still definitely an A-level book for me. I gave, like you said, we both gave it an A-. And best book I've read this so far this year, for sure, in terms of...
Speak for yourself. I was on a roll. I read this immediately after the Overstory. I was, boom, A-A-A.
You gave away the Overstory before you even let me have a chance to read it, so...
I would say the closest relative this book has would be The Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead.
I thought you didn't like that one that much.
So I preferred this one to it, for sure. They're both sort of taking a slave narrative and trying to build on it. And I think this one was more effective, kind of going the journey adventure route, whereas The Underground Railroad tries to go kind of fantasy sci-fi almost with it. And a little bit magical realism.
Whereas this is a little bit more like questy.
Yeah.
I'm inexplicably going to be in the Arctic kind of thing.
Yeah. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was a quick read. Like I said, I was engaged from beginning to end, so.
Yeah, I would agree. I recommend it. Especially if you're like, oh, wait, February is already over, and I never even read a single book by a black author in February for Black History Month.
Guilt trip. This podcast is
take
just
that
be,
white guilt.
This podcast is going to be blank and blank plus guilt trips.
Take this white guilt and go read this book, because it was really good and you'll enjoy it.
We're over the hour mark, so we're on to upcoming things. I have one thing.
I have three, four? What is this one? I don't even understand.
HBO is getting set up for a new show with Zach Woods, who would be from Silicon Valley and The Office, Gabe.
Yes.
And Hugh Lowry, a.k.a. House. They're going to do a space comedy.
Okay.
In
is
the
it
vein
the same
of
one as
Veep,
Michael Carell?
Kind of.
Say Steve what? Carell. Is it the same one as Steve Carell?
Why don't you just call him Michael Carell?
I don't know.
You're wasted.
Drink a little bit.
What are your upcoming things?
Michael Scott, that's why.
Michael Scott. That's a bit of a portmanteau.
Five Dark Fates by Kendari Blake book.
Good title.
Those books that I read over Christmas.
Sure.
Three Dark Crowns, One Dark Throne.
I see a theme.
It's a theme, except it's a little bit annoying because it started with Three Dark Crowns and then it went to like One Dark Throne and then it went to like Two Dark something.
Even Sarah J. Maas isn't that bad.
And now it's Five Dark Fates, so it's not actually in order. It goes like 3, 1, 2, 5. Before Washington Black, my favorite book of the year was actually a novella, which was The Oracle Queens, one of the novellas that went along with this universe, and it was excellent. And I may have strategically started the year with these novellas so that I could help my book to just score.
Padding.
But,
always be padding.
I did.
I'm throwing out catchphrases to add to the title of the show.
That's what's going to be the parentheses. Plus Bennett's attempts at bad catchphrases, or bad attempts at good catchphrases. So anyway, she is going to have what I hope is the conclusion to the series called Five Dark Fates to figure out what happens to these princesses. So this book series, I raced through them near Christmas. I was like, I just need to finish like one or two more books to get my book digits goal. And I'll just stick it on Kindle since we'll be traveling. And I like was like begging you to like get your mom
You've
to get me a copy of the book.
Any, you were like, can your mom get me this book? And I was like, no.
I read it on my phone. I read two books on my phone plus the novellas because that's how much I like needed to read the next in the series. I didn't actually rate them that high. I think I gave them in the B rating.
Yeah, this always happens. You're like, oh my god, I need to finish this book, and you're like, it was okay.
That's why
it was okay.
That's why there's an. That's how I sound to you. That's why there's an addictiveness rating on book digits. You've told
it's
me this
true.
Many times. Like, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the best crafted book I've ever
read.
Oh,
we're gonna get into that when we talk
addictive.
Next week about the book I finished this weekend. Picture Us in the Light.
Oh, yeah.
All right, what else is upcoming?
The Children of Blood and Bone.
Seen the cover, haven't read it.
Anyway, I thought it was really good, and there's going to be a sequel this year. It's getting a movie adaptation, I think, which I think will be really good. That's another one that surprised me a little bit, kind of like Washington Black, where I was just like, oh, I don't really know how this is going to go. And it was basically Avatar The Last Airbender, but with all black characters and kind of like a African-based fantasy world.
Cool.
And it was very fast-moving, very YA, and I really enjoyed it. And there's going to be an adaptation. We spoke about Bohemian Rhapsody earlier. Rocket Man with Taron Egerton.
Yep.
The Elton John.
God, that face you gave when you found out that it's the actor singing and they're not piping in Elton John. The face you made.
I don't know about that choice. I just don't know about the choice. I mean, Rami Malek basically just lip synced for 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
So I appreciate that they're trying to make it a little bit more realistic and have him actually singing. And I'm hoping that...
Sing us a song,
Billy.
I was testing you.
I'm hoping that Rocket Man will be just as fun to watch with less of the like hangover after in terms of...
What is Elton John's story aside from being gay and writing the Princess Diana song? Really?
But I've asked my mom this so many times. I'm like, are you sure nobody knew that Elton John and Freddie Mercury were gay? Like, are you sure? Like, are you sure? But supposedly nobody knew he was gay. He switched his pronouns in a lot of his songs.
Hmm.
Anyways, so I'm intrigued by it. I like Taron Egerton. You still haven't watched the Kingsman movies.
Tiny Dancer.
That's the correct one. There you go. My only other one is for you. I'll let you read it out. It's the second to last line.
This is time to get up. It's time to slam now. We got a real jam going out. Welcome to the Space Jam 2. We did a whole episode with me singing the Space Jam soundtrack, right?
Yes.
Do you think Seal's going to be invited back for the soundtrack? I have, like... I
haven't heard that name in a long time. The Rose, that meme that you did not think was funny.
Stop. Stop.
It was so funny.
I have less than zero confidence in this movie because of, like, people going back and being like, oh, hey, heads up, like, Space Jam's actually, like, a terrible movie. Like, it doesn't have flow. It doesn't have context. It's just strange.
There's aliens plus Bill Murray.
And so that's ruined the original for me. I can't even watch it on TV nowadays.
I don't know if I've ever seen Space Jam.
And this one is just going to be a PR piece for LeBron.
Probably.
Just like Trainwreck was with Bill Hader and What's-Her-Face, where it was like, look, LeBron can be funny.
Yeah.
It's just going to be an extended SNL
skit.
Look,
white people like LeBron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love LeBron, but I don't need to see him in movies.
I don't love him.
He's a good guy.
I'm kind of indifferent to him.
He's a beast. That's it?
That's all I had. Do you have anything else? Okay.
That's it. Roger Federer won his 100th ever title this
good
morning.
Job, babe.
From Dubai.
I thought you were in Mexico still. It's real confusing.
No, Mexico's on right now, so we're going to go watch it.
I'm not going to. Keep that royal we to yourself.
Okay.
Thanks for listening. If you want to follow us, I'll try and post some of our links on Twitter, at DDGetDown. You can also follow... Who are you kissing?
Listeners.
You can follow Book Digits on Instagram or on Twitter, both at Book Digits. You can follow
me. Mom gives the Instagram account high marks.
She does?
Yep.
She does. I try. Well, I don't really try that hard, but...
You found a picture to take with that Washington Black cover, so anything's possible.
I did. It was very snowy. We didn't even talk about Minnesota weather, so you're welcome, podcast listeners.
Yeah, for those playing bingo, now you just got the center square.
Yeah, Minnesota weather. So thanks for listening. As always, have a great week, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.